This is the eHealth Radio Network, your source for health advice on demand. And now your host, Eric Michaels.
Thanks for joining us once again here on the eHealth Radio Network. This is your host, Eric Michaels. eHealth Radio gives you the most current health information, news, and advice featuring some of the leading innovators in healthcare and wellness who are changing healthcare as we know it. For more eHealth Radio reports, we invite you to visit our main radio channel site at eHealthRadioNetwork.com. Dr. Thomas Paws is a distinguished senior scientist, director of population neuroscience and developmental neuroimaging program from Holland Bloorview Hospital, and a professor of psychology and psychiatry at the University of Toronto. Is studying large cohorts of brains of children and adolescents who has experienced early adversity and or has been living with various disabilities to see what makes these brains vulnerable and to use this data to help promote healthy brain development in both individuals with and without a disability. Dr. Paws, who coined the term and study of population neuroscience, will use brain imaging on children with disabilities using child-friendly and accessible research MRI. Holland Bloorview aims to leverage these life-changing research findings to impact the lives of kids, youth, and families across the globe. Joining us today to talk more about this latest research is Dr. Paws himself. Dr. Paws, welcome to eHealth Radio.
It's a pleasure to be on your show, Eric.
It certainly is our honor and pleasure to have you with us today. So Holland Bloorview is known to be a global player in kids' rehabilitation. Tell us more about that and how the hospital is leading the way in big data as part of healthcare today.
Well, I should tell you and your listeners that I have joined Holland Bloorview only a few months ago, and we are really just getting going, starting with the program that you so well described. So this hospital, the Kids Rehabilitation Hospital here, is really the leader in supporting kids with different disabilities. They see over 8,000 children and teenagers here every year with disabilities ranging from autism spectrum disorder, cerebral palsy, Duchenne muscular dystrophy, and other conditions like that, mostly chronic conditions. So we have two large hospitals here in Toronto, the Sick Kids and the Holland Bloorview, and they complement each other in providing different type of care. And of course, what we need is to understand how we can help those kids. We had just this past Monday, we had a gala dinner, and I was amazed. I was happy to be there, and I was amazed to see the two masters of ceremonies, two teenagers with disabilities who were just remarkable in showing us how they are not bothered by living with a disability. And we just want to understand better what's happening in those brains, how they are managing and to succeed in this context. And for that, we really need large numbers. And that's where our program, that's the aspiration of our program.
If you would, Dr. Paws, talk to us about your upcoming research and the latest study that you are conducting.
So what we have done in the past, let me bring it back first a few, well, maybe more like 15 years back. That's when we started with those large studies that we now call population neuroscience studies. So that's really a combination of trying to understand how environment and genes combine to shape our brains. And you can imagine, brains are complex. There are many environments. There are thousands of genes. So that complexity, one way to deal with it is large numbers. So I often talk about sort of a game of tools and numbers. The tools are really the technology that allows us to do things, technology such as brain imaging that has, in my 20 years in this business, it has evolved tremendously. I mean, those magnetic resonance imaging scanners can show us the brain in great detail. So imagine, without obviously opening the head, you can see what's between the ears, and you can quantify it. So that's one technology that we need. The other one is all the genetics that has moved forward in huge steps over the past 20 years. So we know so much about genes. We can take one small blood sample, and from that we learn not only about the different variations in our genes. Many of your listeners would know about services like 23andMe, when you can send, a bit of saliva, and they tell you what your ancestry is, etc., etc. But then we also learn this way about which genes are expressed and why they are expressed. And then the third one is really the environment, our physical and social environment. And there we are kind of lagging behind. But again, the technology is catching up. We are able to use our smartphones, different wearables, to collect detailed information about what's going on around us, whether it's the quality of air or how much we walk, etc. So that's the tools part. And without tools, of course, there is no science. On the numbers side, as I said, we need the big numbers. Now, how do we do that? Well, there are sort of three elements of it. There is the funding, because big numbers means, of course, high cost. Then the second element is really patience, because you need to be super patient when you are collecting thousands and thousands of data sets, thousands and thousands of images. So some of our studies have been running for 10, 20 years. And then you have the third part, and that's cooperation. It's just amazing. When I was starting again, 20, 30 years ago, we were competing with each other, the scientists, right? We were sort of guarding our little secrets, and now it's the time when data are being shared. And we cooperate with each other. We form big groups of scientists who pool those images and the genes together, and we have 20, 30,000 individuals data sets that we can really now reach the goal of sorting out those complexities. So and we've been doing it now in the past with different cohorts. What we want to do now at Holland Blue Review, to take that approach and move it into area of disability and adversity. Because we are talking about two different things here, right? One is disability. So as I said, some children are living with disability, and some are coping remarkably well. I'm just thinking again about Emma and Ty, the two masters of ceremonies on Monday. Just incredible. We want to know why. How did that happen? That they faced certain early adversity. I don't know the details, of course, in those two cases. For example, it might have been very preterm birth. And they managed so well. And some of the answers would be in their genes, in their brains, some of them in the family environment, some even more globally at the level of the community. We don't know. We want to find out, right? And then there are also other cases when you have the same early adversity. I mentioned very preterm birth. So in Toronto, if you take the population of Toronto is about 2.7 million, right? So you have about 20,000 children born preterm, prematurely, among children between the age of 10 and 19. Of course, some of them have some forms of disability, some don't. We need to know again what increases vulnerability, but also what increases resilience of those children in terms of the development of, for example, a disability. And again, for that, we need to set up a large cohort. So, bottom line, what we are really working hard on is to get funding for a cohort that would take 10,000 children, two-thirds of them born prematurely, and now work with them for the next 10 years to figure out what's happening in those brains, what's happening with their cognition, with their behavior, What's happening also with the families? We want to work, obviously, with the mothers, fathers, with the caregivers, and understand the family environment, understand the schools, et cetera, so that we get some answers to those questions.
Certainly appreciate the full coverage. Really helpful information. Now, when you say for the first time this type of research is being conducted, why do you feel this research is critical to the advancement of healthy brain development in individuals with or without a disability?
Well, the diversity is the answer, right? So I mentioned to you that over the past 10, 15 years, we and others have been studying what sometimes we talk about typically developing children. I don't really know what that terms mean, what that term means, but we just need to increase the diversity. Some very early studies, I'm thinking about a study that was done, initiated about 30 years ago at NIH, was studying children of mostly NIH employees. So you can imagine that was a fairly biased sample, children of scientists. And we, of course, need to know about brains of general population, of everyone, whether they have means or they don't, whether they live with a single parent or in a sort of different type of family setting. And so or whether they live with a disability or not. And that is really what has been lacking in the past studies, in the studies that we've been and others have been generating in the past. So that diversity, of course, allows would hopefully give us a better picture of the capacity of the brain to develop in a healthy way, to overcome challenges, to overcome adversity, right? And also give us some ideas about how we can help someone who may be in a disadvantageous situation and what we can do to provide some additional scaffolding around those brains, around those families as those kids are growing up.
Now, as I had mentioned earlier, you coined the term population neuroscience. Tell us what that exactly means.
It's really a combination of essentially three disciplines. One discipline, that traditional discipline that is called epidemiology, that is really concerned about external environment. Epidemiology really started over 150 years ago when a physician in London discovered that there is a relationship between dying of cholera and getting water from one particular source one particular well. So that's epidemiology. The second discipline is really genetics. So that's telling us about what I would refer to as internal exposures. So what it is that our body is really producing. Our genes, of course, are simply the code for producing different chemicals, proteins that are very important for the functioning of our brains and bodies. So these are the two key disciplines. And the third one is really neuroscience. And neuroscience for me is really seeing the brain, quantifying how the brain developed, both in terms of the structure, but also function. And I can do that, as I mentioned at the very beginning, in a very effective way with magnetic resonance imaging, a completely non-invasive tool that we've been using, that of course people, MRI, people know in clinical context, but the same machine can be used for research, and it can be used even starting before birth. We've been doing studies when we scanned babies in the womb, 30-week-old fetuses, and as they are developing, looking at the brains, for example, of yet unborn babies, of mothers who smoke during pregnancy or who don't, and seeing that in fact the smoking during pregnancy is affecting the growth of the body, but also the growth of the brain. But we can then study, of course, in the same way, children, teenagers, all the way to old age. So, the whole lifespan.
Today we are with Dr. Thomas Paws, a distinguished senior scientist, director of population neuroscience and developmental neuroimaging program from Holland Bloorview Hospital, here on eHealth Radio's Health News Channel, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. Now, continuing on, Dr. Paws, how long do you believe that the study will take, and what do you hope to achieve from the research findings?
So, we really need a trajectory, and that means it has to be what we call a longitudinal study. So we start in year one, and then we bring the kids back 2 years later, and again 4 years later. So in total, a study like this would last minimum 10 years. And that's very similar to a different initiative that has just started in the U.S. in the U.S. Called the ABCD study. Also, a study of 10,000 children, but children who are typically developing or healthy children. So the same idea: 10 years, 10,000 children, and following their development. Now, unlike the ABCD study, where as I said, the children are typically developing. In our study, we are increasing that range of diversity by including, in fact, by enriching 2/3 of those children would be children who faced early adversity, such as most likely preterm birth. And that's what we are still deciding whether that's the way to go, but most likely. And of course, by doing so, we will be able to answer questions that you cannot answer if all the children, very few children faced adversity. So questions that will tell us about factors that influence resilience, questions about vulnerability, and questions about ways in which the brain in some way compensates, for example, some part of the brain not working very well. So these are the kind of questions that we'll be asking, and asking them in the context of both the environment and the genes, because both, of course, play a major role in shaping our brains.
And most certainly there. Now, how will your research remove boundaries faced by individuals growing up with disabilities?
It's the knowledge. I mean, we are really hoping that the new knowledge that would be produced in this fashion would contribute to minimizing or removing, ideally, the boundaries that some of those individuals face. But that doesn't mean removing the disability, right? It means finding the workarounds, helping those children to fulfill their potential in their own way, right? But the knowledge about the brain and knowledge about the different ways the brain can go about its business, that's what we are hoping would facilitate removing the boundaries that may exist today for some of those kids.
And also tagging on to that, how will Holland Bloorview leverage the research innovations to develop market-ready products to support kids with disabilities?
Well, that question should go to our colleagues here who are doing this kind of work. I'm just a scientist who is trying to generate new knowledge. But this place, I told you, I've been here for only a few months, and I met with the VP research, of course. Tom Chow has been doing amazing work along those lines. So that's really a good question to put to him. We also have innovation officer who is really very good in listening and seeing what we are doing and finding the right way of translating that knowledge into products. But that's not my area.
And of course, appreciate your honest response to that last question. Now, what do you feel are the global implications of this study, and how will this benefit U.S. children as well?
Well, they are the same as Canadian children, right? So, I mean, knowledge has no boundaries. As I mentioned to you when we talk about the numbers, the cooperation part is really about cooperating across countries. So those big consortia that are putting together knowledge acquired in different cohorts, those cohorts are based in Canada, in the US, in Brazil, in different European countries. So we work with colleagues across the world, and it's fascinating to see how, in fact, similar many of the answers that we find in different settings are. So obviously, humanity has no boundaries, and the effects of genes and environment are very similar across the globe.
Well, Dr. Paws, it certainly has been phenomenal to have had you with us today, and we can't thank you enough for what you're doing in this space. If one wanted to go for more information and to learn more about your research and the hospital, where could they find further information online?
It's on the website of the Holland Blue Review Kids Rehabilitation Hospital. They can just plug in my name, and we have a section of the website that describes quite a few things we talk about today.
And that sounds good enough, and we'll include links within the show notes of this broadcast. Again, Dr. Paws, all the best, and thanks so much for joining us here today on eHealth Radio.
Thank you so much.
We've been speaking with Dr. Thomas Paws, a distinguished senior scientist, director of population neuroscience and developmental neuroimaging program from Holland Bloor View Hospital. And for further details, simply visit hollandbloorview.ca. And again, this has been your host, Eric Michaels, and we do thank you for your continued support of the eHealth Radio Network. Join us again soon for another episode that will help further expand your knowledge on those things that are important to your health and wellness. For more eHealth Radio reports, we invite you to visit our main radio channel site at eHealthRadioNetwork.com. And as always, we do thank you for tuning in.
Thanks for tuning in to the eHealth Radio Network. For more information or to subscribe to this podcast, visit eHealthRadioNetwork.com.